Welcome to the Midlife Male Podcast, a podcast designed to help men maximize middle age and live healthier, wealthier, stronger, and happier. I am Greg Scheinman, and I'm inviting you to join the thousands of men who listen each week, receive my Midlife Male newsletter, and are committed to making this next phase of life our best phase. If you have not yet downloaded my No BS Guide to Maximizing Midlife, where I break down the three principles to maximizing middle age and taking back some of that shit you've given up, head on over to midlifemail.com/No BS Guide. Guys are loving these three principles to maximizing middle age, and you can download your copy today at midlifemail.com/No BS Guide. All right, guys, Greg Scheinman here. Another week, another Midlife Male podcast. Welcome to the show. If you like what you hear, please give us that 5-star rating, leave us a positive review, and share the Midlife Male podcast with your friends. Keep the Midlife Male movement growing. You can also head over to midlifemail.com, subscribe to the newsletter, get it dropped in your inbox each and every Sunday. Check out the special offers from my Midlife Male brand partners, coaching program, download a free copy of my No BS Guide to Maximizing Middle Age, all sorts of really good stuff, and it's all at midlifemail.com. Speaking of writing, speaking of podcasting, speaking of tweeting, I got Chris Kaysen on the show today. Chris is a journalist out of Chicago. He writes on fashion, health, media, sports, and his work has been seen in Forbes, Yahoo, Fast Company, Hoops Magazine, NBA.com, Hypebeast, Muscle and Fitness, and GQ, which is really where I came to start reading Chris's work regularly. He does the real life diet column that's in GQ, and I love it. He's got the real life diet of Patriots lineman Trent Brown up right now, the real life diet of F1 veteran Fernando Alonso. It keeps going. Entrepreneurs, athletes, all these guys, he digs into it, and it's really super, super cool stuff. And I geek out on this stuff. So I really want to know what these guys are eating, what they're doing, what their real lives look like. Jason Oppenheim of Selling Sunset on there too. Really, really cool stuff. And Chris digs in, gets personal, spends some time with these guys, puts out really great content and articles week in and week out. So I reached out. That's what I do. I reached out over Instagram and said, hey, I like your work. Read it all the time. Would love for you to come on the podcast, chop it up. You've spoken to enough midlife males. You're out there, a man yourself, training, eating healthy, talking to all of these guys, share some of that insight and knowledge with all of us here. And Chris was cool enough to do that. So here he is this week on the Midlife Male podcast, Chris Kaysen. Chris, welcome to the show.
Yo, it's great. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
No, it's really my pleasure. I appreciate you doing this because I kind of, people ask me all the time, you know, how do you get your guests for the podcast? You know?
Yeah.
It's like all the assignments that you get in writing, and we'll get into that. It's like, how do you interview those people? How do you get in those rooms? How do you get these guys, you know, on the show? And the best answer I can come up with so far is I just fucking ask, you know? And not everybody says yes. You were cool enough to say yes, but I've been reading your work for a while now, predominantly in GQ magazine, and specifically the real life diet, you know, column, you know, that's in there. And I love it. It's great. And I get so much valuable information and tips to see how these other men, predominantly midlife men, are living and their habits and their decisions. And your work just really struck me. And then I saw you on Instagram, reached out, and again, you were cool enough to come on. So thank you for that. And guys, that's kind of how it happens.
Right? That's the magic.
Is it, let me ask you, is it, I mean, Is it different for you? Like, how do you choose what you want to write about? Who do you want to profile? Are even the guys from GQ, are they given to you, or are you choosing, you know, who they are?
Oh, so a little bit about my backstory, just how I got started with this series. Started my writing career covering the Chicago Bulls. So I was either in the Bulls locker room before games or the visiting locker room before games. And I think during that time in covering the team, I think, you know, Derrick Rose goes down with an ACL injury. And I remember him asking a question to us when, I don't even think he was asking it directly to reporters, but we were talking to another player and he asked, like, do you guys all write the same thing? And I was like, you know what? Yeah, we kind of do write the same thing. We kind of wait for you guys to speak. It's a different spin on it, but we are just reporting on, you know, the day in and day out of the team. So after he asked that, a light bulb went up in my head. I was like, you know, let me start talking to these guys about things outside of, you know, game recaps and, oh, you shot 2 for 15 this game. Let me start talking about performance and what's driving these guys to perform at the level they are. I had been trying to get into GQ for a while, and they had just started essentially what is now the Real Life Diet series. So my first guy, I was pitching them stuff. They weren't getting back to me. So in comes Memphis. And at the time, there's a 40-year-old Vince Carter. I'm watching him warm up, and he's doing still between the legs. He's windmilling. I was like, this guy is 40 years old. He should not be still able to jump like that. So long story short, I pretty much talked to him. I said, hey, Vince, this is for GQ. Even though I hadn't gotten the yes from GQ yet, I just went ahead and asked him all these questions about his preparation, you know, how he took care of his body, you know, in probably what, 21 years. And he was very insightful. And, you know, that sparked, you know, just me, my career with GQ, essentially just going in there, talking to Vince. And now I can't even remember how many I've done so far. But yeah, it's been great for me as well, just because the guys that are truthful, you get so much valuable insight into like their preparation, the things they avoid. The biggest thing you do learn is that they're human just like us. They have cravings. They have things they're trying to avoid. You know, sometimes they succumb to those pressures. But long story short, to answer your question, I'm at the point now where either agents will reach out to me, different PR companies that may be promoting a brand and they have that athlete to talk to. When I was in the locker rooms, when they were still open, they should be open this upcoming season, I used to already have an insight of who I wanted to talk to. Obviously, the big name guys are going to get, those are who GQ would like, but there may be JaVale McGee, who's, you know, a central part to, you know, a team, and he's a full-on vegan. It's like, how is this guy, you know, a 7'1" freak of nature? How is he out there performing, you know, on a vegan diet? So little things like that is what I look for in crafting, you know, the story, just to make it interesting to the reader. But a large part of it now is just company agents reaching out to me. And it has to make sense, obviously. You know, you just can't throw up a guy there and, you know, he eats like crap. But, you know, that's the long and short of it.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I got a couple questions on there for you also, but as you were saying this and it jumped out, what has this done for your own personal approach, your own diet? You know, you're hearing so much from so many different people. Are you constantly kind of trying new things or changing it up? Are you able to remain consistent, or is it always like, oh, he's a vegan, I should try that, or he's paleo, you should try that, or he's an investor in this brand? You know, I mean, there's so, we get so much sensory and information overload, you know, that it's kind of like, are you curious? Are you a kind of a hacker in all these different methods that these guys talk to you about?
Yeah. So the one thing I realized very quickly is these guys burn a lot of calories, you know, throughout the day. You know, they have practices, they have workouts, they have training. As a normal human being, we're not burning the amount of calories, you know, they are during the course of the day. So just like with everyone that I speak to, you kind of have to find what works for you. Me, I've experimented with, you know, going vegan for about a week, and I just realized it's not good for me just in terms of my lifestyle and where it is currently. But mainly, I just like to eat cleanly, you know. So not a real big breakfast guy, but I do try and put something in my body in the morning, you know, whether that be a protein smoothie, some oatmeal, just something to sit on my stomach just to, you know, kind of help get me through to lunch. Lunch is normally easy, you know, something like salad, baked chicken, and dinner is also kind of something along those lines. I'm not a real like heavy eater, but yeah, you do get sometimes where a guy will say something that piques your interest. You're like, let me see if that can work for me. But the one thing you do realize is, you know, these guys burn off a lot more than they're putting into their body. So like, you can't replicate that at all as a normal 9-to-5 worker at all.
Do you have, and I want to get into your whole backstory about your writing career and how it's, how you got it started, how you've gotten everything built up as well. I'm curious just on this for one sec, because you don't just speak to athletes. I was looking last month. I think you had and the real estate broker, the twins, right? You had one of the twins or the
Jason
brothers.
Oppenheim.
Jason Oppenheim too. And I'm reading that, and he's ordering in food every night and doing everything. So it's not just athletes that you talk to, it's other entrepreneurs, businessmen, various, you know, types of people in there. Do you notice anything distinctly different? Like, do you approach the assignment any differently? Or obviously the, you know, the training of an athlete versus, let's say, just a business person is clearly different, but
yeah.
Any kind of similarities or things that jump out to you or significant differences?
The similarities is no matter how busy during the day is, they have to eat at some point, you know, and like what they eat varies. But I would say I never enter an interview with like a cookie cutter model at all, because everybody that I'm speaking to is different, you know, regardless if it's an NBA player, NFL player, like I treat all of them as individuals. So I never go into it blindly. I have like a feel of, you know, what they need to fuel their body, some of the things that, you know, they may be doing. Sometime if it's an NFL or NBA guy and I have like a relationship with a team nutritionist or a team trainer, I'll reach out to them, not for like very specifics, but just like some things to like, hey, what does this guy like to do? What is, you know, what do you give this guy after practice? So I'll have some intel going into most interviews on what they like to do. But the one similarity, like I said, they all have to eat at some point. So you go to Jason Oppenheim, who I would say probably has one of the busiest like day-to-day jobs, you know, out of anybody. You know, not only is he writing and directing, you know, Netflix films now, but he's also part owner of this huge real estate brokerage in LA. So just him finding that 15 to 45 minute window just to go squeeze in a workout, because he knows he's probably going to have like some takeout later or some ice cream after that, that's valuable for him. It not only does, you know, helps him with his physical, but it also helps him with his mental, because I can imagine he's inundated with phone calls throughout the day, emails, and just that little 15 to 45 minutes at the gym where you don't have your phone on you, you know, does a lot for him. So going into like John Cena, like all of these guys are individual in their approach. And a lot of the younger guys I talk to, they're still kind of navigating, all right, what should I do? Like, what should I be trying to eat? What works best for me? Like, what doesn't work for me? They're still in that process of trying to figure things out.
And you're able to, because of it, you're able to humanize it. You know, each one of these is different. These guys are giving you what they really do, you know, how they really operate, how they really balance it. And it humanizes kind of what they're all about, you know, and they're just dealing with the same stuff that the rest of us are. You know, they got to squeeze in a meal here. They got to squeeze in a workout, you know, there. Do you go on location for these? Do you follow guys around, or is this done remotely?
Well, now I would say since COVID, a lot of them have been done remotely. There's been a few where, you know, I've gone to just having relationships with guys where I've gone to somebody's kitchen before. But yeah, very, very, that's very seldom. With NBA locker rooms opening back up, hopefully at the start of this upcoming season, I'll be back in there. So a lot of them were face-to-face, like it was talking to guys before they're getting ready to go play a game or after they just played a game. And a lot of them now are just remote. They're Zoom calls. They're quick, you know, 20, 25-minute phone calls. So it's been helpful that, you know, I've still been able to, you know, get the insight, you know, just throughout COVID.
That's pretty cool that you can knock these out with 20, 25 minute phone calls, then craft it and get it out there with the amount of information that you get out from all of them. I think that's pretty cool. Because did you always know that you wanted to be a writer? Like, take me through. I said I wanted to circle back on the back story of your background and kind of how you got started. Just becoming a writer. I think a lot of people, and I am curious, like, how does somebody get a, you said, you know, you talked earlier, like GQ wasn't getting back to you. And then, you know, you're talking to Vince Carter and you're saying, this is for GQ. And I put it, I think people are like fascinated and interested. As I said, I know I am in the process of like, how do you start writing for publications? You know, how do you, from the time that you decide you want to be a writer, kind of figure out and navigate what kind of writer you want to be and get, and walk me through kind of how this has happened for you.
Yeah, definitely. So let's say I'll try to summarize it best. So growing up, you know, my strong suits was always English. My grandmother and my mother did a very good job of reading to me like bedtime stories, or it was the Bible, something like that. So I always had like a respect for storytelling. As I got older, I started reading a lot of Slam Magazine, Inside Stuff Magazine, and I quickly saw, I was one of those kids who would read the newspaper also because my grandfather got them, go to the sports section and read that. But I saw the words of Scoop Jackson, who's at ESPN now, jumped out to me because not only did I see a way of writing that spoke to me, I was like, oh, you can have fun doing this. So throughout high school, really, my focus was on getting to the NBA, you know, just as a kid in the west side of Chicago. But once I got to NIU, Northern Illinois, like this is the day that kind of changed like what I was going to do, what my focus was on. We had an assistant coach there by the name of Donna Whiteside, and I had heard Donna Whiteside played in the NBA. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, this is my opportunity to walk on the team. You know, let me go out here and show them what I could do. So we're matched up against them. I'm 6'1", probably about 190 at the time. Donald Whiteside, I want to give him, like, I don't want to disrespect him. I want to give him 5'10", maybe like 175. So ball goes up, you know, my first shot's a three. And as an 18-year-old kid from the west side of Chicago who's trying to prove a point, I'm pretty sure after that ball went through the net, there was a lot of expletives and trash talk after that. And he literally, after that basket, he made it his point to score all 16 points on me. And there was nothing I could do at all. And after the game, he came over and talked to me. But in my head, I was like, you know, if this guy just did this to me at what, maybe 30, 32 years old, I was like, how am I going to compete with like the Chris Pauls, the Jason Kidd? I was like, this guy, you know, was playing overseas for a while. So I love Donald Whiteside still for that. I've told that story before, but, you know, I'm hoping he sees that now. But that kind of shifted my focus to maybe I better fully put everything into this writing. So come back to Chicago, finish up at Columbia, and then one of my mentors, Anthony Gilbert, who's written for Soul Collector, who's done stuff with Nike, he sends me something. There's a company called Most Valuable Network, and they're looking for writers, and you'd be perfect because you're in Chicago, you're a Bulls fan. And it was essentially watching Bulls games, doing game recaps, doing opinion columns, and things like that. So I started out my career with that. And this is so unconventional. It's the reason why when I talk to kids now who ask me, you know, how did you get started? I was like, it's not like how it used to be. But I was like, I started blogging, and then 2008, there's a company called The Examiner, theexaminer.com, which is now AXS.com. They reach out to me and say, hey, we love what you're doing over there. Would you want to come do it with us? And I was like, you know, I kind of have a loyalty to them because they gave me my shot. The only way I would come over there is if you guys fight with the NBA and the Chicago Bulls to give me credential, because that was the last thing I needed, was to actually have locker room access, to talk to players, to, you know, really give you true insight. So they fought. Like, my first event was the 2008 NBA Draft Combine. So that's Steph Curry, Blake Griffin, DeMar DeRozan. Like, that's my rookie class, essentially. And ever since from there, like, the Bulls PR, they was like, all right, well, we see you're not coming in here to do, like, you're not really coming in here and you're not going to make us look bad. So, yeah, you come in on a game-by-game basis. And, you know, I covered that team for the Examiner, I believe, until 2015. And then that time I began freelancing. So I did stuff with Soul Collector, Complex, Hypebeast, all the publications that I grew up reading. I started reaching out to them saying, hey, guys, I'm in these locker rooms. I have access to these players. Like, let's make something happen. And that kind of how my freelance writing career started. I just got in a door, spoke to everybody, whether it could be the janitor at the stadium. It could be your mother. It could be a player's auntie. I'm speaking to everybody because, you know, you never know in professional sports, you never know who somebody is going to become. That person that you may have disrespected or may have said something smart to, they may eventually be running that team, you know, in 15 years, and everybody remembers everything. So that's kind of like the long and short of how I got started with my writing career. It's so unconventional just because I think a large part of the people that came before me, you start off writing for, you know, a paper, you move your way up from like the high school to the college ranks, and then you go to the pros. My path was so unconventional. When I do talk to kids, I was like, yo, you kind of have it a little bit easier. All you have to do is start writing. You can create a Substack now. You know, I always tell people, like, don't bash an organization. Don't, you know, bash players. Actually try and give some insight with your reporting, because, you know, PR teams look at that. Like, you're not going to invite a guy into the locker room if you've been, you know, trashing the organization for like 2 years. So, yeah, that's the long and short of like how I got started. It's just very unconventional.
You mentioned your mentor, and you were talking about Anthony Gilbert as a mentor, you know, there. How did you find a mentor? How did you get him to be a mentor? Again, I think you know, guys often struggle with, hey, who do I listen to? You know, how do I find mentors? How do I get good advice?
Yeah, so I'm not weird in what I did, but I'm going to date myself a little bit. When Facebook first began, you know, I was in college. While everybody was, you know, reaching out to friends they went to high school and grammar school with, like, I started reaching out to, like, people that I was reading at the time. So I was finding editors, writers at Soul Collector, and I read Anthony Gilbert's work in Soul Collector. So I reached out to him on Facebook. Hey, love what you do. You know, I'm trying to do, you know, a similar thing. And he could have easily blown that message off, but this is a guy from Philadelphia. He's also a mentee of Scoop Jackson. So he could have easily blown that off, but he kept in contact with me throughout the years. And when an opportunity came up, he passed it over to me. And I was very appreciative of that. And it was up to me to not only not waste that opportunity, but make him not be sorry that, you know, he passed that opportunity to me. So I took that blogging job, even though I wasn't getting paid, I took that very seriously. I took it like any reporter would, you know, their job. I gave myself deadlines after games, things like that. And then having the chance and opportunity to meet the ultimate mentor in Scoop Jackson, whose words I grew up reading, like all throughout high school. I used to get in trouble so much for reading those slam magazines throughout high schools. They would take them from me. I would get them back at the end of class. But Scoop has also been somebody very valuable to me, you know, now being to the point where I can reach out, call him, text him, and he's still giving me advice, even, you know, at the age of 37. So those mentorships are like very valuable. And to be in a position now where kids will reach out to me on LinkedIn, social media, and they're asking me the same questions that I had coming up, it kind of makes you feel old, but it also makes you, it also gives you like a sense of validation a little bit. And I also treat that with a lot of responsibilities because I don't want to steer a kid in the wrong way. My question to them also is, you know, how bad do you want it? Because it's a very competitive field. You got to get used to hearing no a lot, and you have to let that roll off your back and move forward to the, you know, to the next opportunity.
Mm. You know, you mentioned, you know, the thought of things that make you feel old, you know, and earlier on you were talking about seeing Vince Carter out there at 40. And by the way, you're only 37. I'm pushing 50 right now. So, so just wait. But when you see, you know, when you see 40 around the corner, you know, a few years to go and kind of the next phase, I'm like, what do you see, you know, for yourself now? I mean, could you even have pictured doing what you're doing now at the stage you're at, and kind of where else do you want to go?
Well, yeah, just doing the things I'm doing now. That was like the dream. You know, I covered the team that I grew up watching as a kid. I'm telling, you know, stories of professional athletes, and I still don't take it, everybody will reach out and, oh man, I can't believe you talked to so-and-so. And in my head, I know it's a privilege because growing up where I grew up at, that really doesn't happen at all. There was no example for me growing up that I could point to and say, he's doing it so I can do it. You know, I had to believe that, you know, it was possible. But approaching 40, you raise the bar for yourself. I don't think you should ever stop dreaming. I believe your dream should only, evolve, you know, as you get older. So what I see for myself as I get older, with the way content is working now, I do want to start doing more like visual stories. So it could be a GQ real life diet, but now we're actually going into the kitchen, you know, of whatever athlete or whatever entertainer. We're seeing meals being prepared for them. We're talking to team nutritionists now to see, like, not to divulge like specific information, because guys are very secretive with a lot of things involved in their preparation. But now you're seeing what goes into, you know, cooking or preparing meals for a 380-pound defensive tackle. You're seeing what, you know, Ja Morant is eating before a game, before he goes out there and he scores 40. So that's where I think is next for me. You know, I would love to even get to the point where I get into my 50s, and now, you know, I'm working, you know, working for like a team's front office. I look at Lee Jenkins is doing for the Clippers, you know, how, you know, they brought an SI writer over, like, and he's helping with like the background stories of these players. Like, I don't think anything has come out after he's joined the Clippers on what he's doing specifically. But I look at there really are no like boundaries anymore. Like, I believe if you can dream it, especially in the world of professional sports, if you can dream a role and you add value to an organization or to its players or its fan base, I believe, you know, it's possible.
Mm. Now, you talk a lot about sports and the sports teams and covering the teams that you grew up on and the athletes that you're in. But earlier on also, you touched on other publications that you do work for and as a freelancer too. And when it was jumping out to me when you're talking about like Architectural Digest and stuff, you know, even some really interesting stuff that's going on over at Boardroom. And I was fortunate, I had Rich Kleiman on the show a while back, you know, talking about a lot of the stuff that they're doing, you know, over there. And I was curious, interest in architecture, interest in business of sports, is it more that you're now a sought after writer and you're getting asked to do different types of things? Are you saying, hey, I kind of, I'm interested in architecture designer. I've got an idea and I'm pitching them. How does it work?
Yeah, definitely. So when you start out, I started my career like at 25. So sneakers, fashion, and things like that appeal to me. They still do, but I've always been, a person that appreciated architectural design. Like, why is that table made that way? Why is that chair made that way? And Architectural Digest was a publication that I always paid attention to now for like well over a decade. So just knowing now that there is the opportunity, even though everything I do is kind of under professional sports, there's so many avenues now to tell stories to, like, you know, this guy may be designing, you know, a clothing line, or this guy may even be, you know, partnering up with a company that's, you know, designing, you know, better ergonomic furniture. So being able to reach out to these publications now, say, hey, this is what I can do. I have access to, these are the kind of individuals I have access to. You know, I want to tell these stories on your platform. And that's kind of how it works now. I used to be one of those guys who would go to the Barnes and Noble like all the time. And I would, you know, pretty much I wouldn't be in there reading, but I'm literally in there looking at the masthead of the publication and I'm seeing what editor does what. And I'm reaching out to those editors saying, hey, you know, I do this. I feel I can add value here. You know, let's talk. So that's kind of how that goes.
Is that still how it goes? I'm curious about how guys break into publications. You know, again, as you said, anybody can write these days. They can go onto Substack, they can set up a blog, they can set up a newsletter. Anybody can be a writer right now. But to actually get into the muscle fitnesses, you know, I had Jeff Tomko on, again, the boardrooms, the Architectural Digest, the GQ, you know, looking at names. It's one thing to look at the names and read them. It's another thing to understand how you get in touch with them, how you approach them, how you cut through. You know?
Yeah.
I'd love kind of your advice on that, because obviously you've been successful. Is it the carrot, you know, like, or the say, is it the guys I have access to and now we can craft something around it? Or is it, I have an idea on this kind of story, you know, and maybe then we can bring the right person into it, or a combination of both? I don't know.
Well, yeah, that goes into like what the editorial team at the publication is looking for. I believe I can't imagine what the inbox of like a GQ editor looks like, because, you know, not only are you getting companies and brands reaching out to you, but you're also getting, you know, who knows how many writers with an idea reaching out to it. So what I would suggest is, it's easy to reach out to somebody now. You have Twitter, you have LinkedIn. I would say before a writer reaches out to, you know, an editor, like, have everything like as concise as possible, to where you can literally say what you want to do, what you're trying to do in four sentences, you know, if not less. Like, an editor has to open that subject line, even has to be like, it has to make me want to open it, you know. So thinking about those little things right there goes a long way. And once you have an editor's attention, like, you want to keep it, obviously, but, you know, you don't want to just reach out, hey, I love what you guys do. I would like to do this. I would like to do that. Don't reach out saying what you would like to do. Reach out saying, hey, I can do this. I can do this. Here's some things similar that showcase that. You know, let's hop on the phone for like 5 to 10 minutes and let's talk. Because these editors are very busy. You know, you can imagine like editing, you know, writer's work, responding to emails, the day-to-day of what an editor goes through. So you want to make things easy for them. So when you reach out to them, have something important to say, and don't just reach out like, hey, I like what you guys do over there. How can I do that? Like, already come with a plan, already come with an understanding of what you can do and the value you're bringing to a publication.
Sounds like maturity. Right. As we talk about getting a little older and experienced.
Yeah, if you would have asked me that, like, man, maybe I would say 10 years ago, I wouldn't have had any idea how to answer that question. Even though I was doing similar things, I was reaching out to guys on Facebook that I grew up reading. I was reaching out by email and just trying to get like some type of guidance. When I first started with the Bulls, like I wouldn't even say I was nervous, but you're just trying to figure out how this ecosystem works, like what time the locker room's open. Like I would always get to the stadium like 3:30 when the media gates open. So I'm there almost 4 hours before tip off. So you're looking at all the inner workings of, you know, the stadium lights being tested, the halftime entertainment, you know, perform, rehearsing their act. You're looking at how players warm up, like what players get to the gym early, what players get to the gym late. Like you're looking at all of that stuff and you're just pretty much trying to figure out like, all right, how do I approach this guy? How do I approach this guy? Like, so I used to watch guys like Sam Smith, Casey Johnson, Agre Sam, Nick Friedel. I used to study them and they didn't even know it, but I was just trying to figure out how do I approach a guy who just had, you know, a horrible game and may not be in the best of mood. What's the right question to lead with to, you know, kind of break the ice and talk to him? So all those little things are so important, and just, you know, having a long career, but also being respected by your peers and the players and the organization, all of that stuff goes a long way.
The Midlife Mail podcast would not be possible without the support of some incredible brand partners. I only recommend brands I use, believe in, and trust. And each brand was handpicked by me for a specific reason. I believe in these guys, not just because they're great companies with great people behind them, but because the stuff works. I use these to stay at my peak, and I suggest you do too. So go over to midlifemail.com and click on special offers for exclusive Midlife Mail discounts and promotions. As you're describing what you're doing, I'm thinking to myself, well, that's the difference maker right there. You know, these intangibles, those little things are what help guys break through, cut through the clutter, stand out, get in the locker room, get the opportunity to talk to them, because not everybody's doing it. Mm-hmm.
No.
Just like some of the athletes are showing up late, you know, to the gym, and some are showing up early, I think some of the writers are showing up late, you know? Mm-hmm. Not when the gates first open, you know, when the doors, yeah. And they're not studying all this. So I think the really kind of one of the takeaways here is for any, like, it's these little things. It really is that hustle. It is that grind. It's getting in early. It's looking for things, studying, understanding the ecosystem, you know, separating yourself from everybody else out there. So they go, okay, I know Chris, a guy I can count on, you know, for this. So he's going to find an angle. He's going to find a story. He's going to lead with the right question. And because most aren't, I would like to say most aren't doing all those other things, you know, that.
Yeah. So I think, I think it was just how I got my start, you know, because when I'm getting in, when I started covering the team, you got Sam Smith, who's been, you know, with the Bulls for forever. You know, he's wrote the Jordan rules, been around the team when they were winning championships. The same thing with Casey Johnson. Lacey Banks, you know, was kind of around also. Rest in peace. But, like, all these guys, they had been there for so long. So it's, you know, it's a routine for them. They already have their routine. They know what to do. What their storyline, they already have their storyline worked out in their heads, and they headed down to such a science. And I wanted to get to that point. I wanted to be the point where I kind of know what's going to happen before it happens. And, you know, that all just comes from being a sponge and soaking everything up, being personable with players. And, you know, it's difficult to do, to still have to write, you know, something negative about them. Like, hey, you know, you might have sucked tonight. I have to talk to you about that. And, you know, players are, I think most of them are sensitive, you know, in some aspects. So you have to find a way to go in there to, like, challenge them or question them without disrespecting them. But I think as long as a player knows you're coming from a respectful place and you're not disrespecting them, everything goes good. But, you know, everything was such a learning process. You know, I'm still learning to this day, you know, because as you advance in your career in professional sports, the players only become younger. You know, each year you have a 18 to 21 year old come in, and you kind of have to, like, I find a way to identify with them, even though it's a completely different generation. The music's different, they're listening to, the clothes are different that they're wearing, but you have to find, there's always something in there you can find a way to relate to a person.
That's a really good point. As the gap widens, you know, between, again, your age and the people you're covering's age. You know, I actually didn't put that correlation together at first because I'm thinking, again, Real Life, Diet, GQ, number of those guys, actually, you know, not only not so much younger, but actually quite older. You know, again, I just tend to kind of look towards the ones that are, you know, my age, a little bit closer to my age, you know, even a few years down the road, because, hey, what's going to happen to my metabolism? What's going to happen? You know, what can I possibly pick up and learn? But now you think about it, as you're kind of the, you know, elder statesman, or I just got back from a retreat in Baja. I guess they're calling us now modern elders, you know, we'll go with modern elder right now. But now you've got significantly, these gaps can be 20 plus years, you know, 20 between, you know, the way these guys are starting out, you know, with their careers younger and younger. And you're looking at it having seen 20 years of seasons, you know, go on and a totally different player type in the way that they move and the way that they respond and have to be approached. So you're constantly tweaking yourself. I don't want to say like trying to bring it down to kind of where they're at, but you do have to be cognizant again of speaking to an 18-year-old differently probably than you'd be speaking, you know, to a 30-year-old or even an upper 20 guy in his upper 20s.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of the challenges of, you know, being a beat reporter that I saw is, you know, you can have, there could be a 30, you know, case of Sam Smith. Sam, I believe, is in his 70s. He's talking to guys that like are literally like 40 years younger than him, which is ridiculous. And, you know, he's still able to crack jokes. He doesn't skip a beat. And I think that all just comes in, you know, he's Sam Smith. He's who he is. You know, he's built up, you know, a rapport, not only with, you know, the veterans who are in their locker room, but he can go and speak to a guy in a way that it translates to all generations, you know, because his job is just to go in there. Hey, I'm trying to tell this story. I'm trying to do this. It's not to bash you, but, you know, I'm trying to tell the story. But it is a challenge, you know, especially if you're trying to have, you know, you're trying to relate to them. That's why I think though that locker room access is so important, because just when you're just shooting the shit with guys for like that 10 to 15 minutes, you know, those little conversations go a long way, because like, hey, we can talk about family in that time. This is all stuff that's off the record. We could talk about cars. You like cars. You're into, you know, NBA guy. A lot of them are into, you know, NFL teams. They have friends on NFL teams. So they have these different sports allegiance as well. Like that little time where you're just getting to learn them goes a long way, because, you know, it builds rapport. But it is difficult because, like, no matter what sport you're in, the next crop of players are always going to be younger, and it's your job to not only be educated and what their backstory is, but you have to be willing to go in there and do like the little work and just getting to know them better, just seeing, you know, what they need access to or like what they need help with. You know, you can help them, you know, guys will, I remember, you know, guys talking about family in there and a lot of stuff they were dealing with their family. I was able to like, okay, well, I can apply that to what I'm going through. You know, it's a similar thing. You know, the only thing that changes is they take care of several households, like a majority of the time. So, but, you know, everything can be applied, you know, if you just sit there and have the conversations with them.
Do you have like a trademark question, you know, or like a go-to question or an icebreaker or something that you've used, go, okay, I can always pull this arrow out of my quiver, you know, like this is kind of like a thing for me. It works, you know, I know it after all this time.
Man, I would say each writing with each publication, there may be like one or two like go-to questions, specifically with the Real Life Diet series. The two things I'm always fascinated about is guys' game day routines, just because everything that leads up to that day, they're so they're just so regimented with it. And I know guys personally that if anything goes wrong with that routine, say they don't get their 30-minute nap, they're going to have a horrible game. Like, it's pretty, you can pretty much pencil it in. Like, if they don't have their nap, or if they don't have, like, let's say their pregame snack, it just throws them off. It throws everything off. So that would be one for the Real Life Diet Series. Just like, hey, give me the specifics of your game day routine from the time you're waking up, what you're eating throughout the day, you know, from the time the lights go on in the stadium until you're done. And then another one, because I know a lot of guys lie about it. Hey, what's the one cheat meal that you'll have throughout the day? Those are two go-tos of mine, because I know guys who will lie about it. It's like, come on, you know, you're not just eating Greek yogurt and granola. Like, tell me about the Snickers that I know you have an addiction to. Tell me about that. So those would be like the two like go-to answers, because most of the time I'll know if a guy is truly lying or if a guy is saying something to sound good. It's like, no, there's no judgment over here. Just let me know what it is.
Have you been surprised, or maybe you can break it here, you're just talking about routine, you know, and how these guys are regimented and routine. And I found that too. Out of all the guys that have come on, I mean, in a measure of success, the guys that seem to be most successful, also they have habit, they've got good habits, they've got routine, they've got discipline, they've got preparation, consistency, you know, lay out the attributes. But there are also some outliers out there, you know. Has anybody really surprised you when you try to get into their routine or you try to get information? You go, I cannot believe this dude just does not have, like, he doesn't seem to have, you know, a routine, or he's not as regimented as the rest, or maybe his routine is, this guy's the most chill person I've ever been around. You know, has anything just shocked you with anybody in particular?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say most of, the NBA has gotten a lot better with this, but like, it used to be a point where the younger guys coming into the league, there was a little bit of direction. They had their times to be at the practice facility. The league has made it so good to where so much of like the little work is taken away from them. So right after practice, you have team chefs. So now you got your post-practice meal. You don't have to worry about going to McDonald's, you know, afterwards and putting something bad in your body. But there are like a couple of guys who can like just eat anything still. And no matter what science says, no matter what, you know, nutrition says, they're still able to eat McDonald's before a game and be great. Dwight Howard was one of those guys, because he was just like such a freak of nature. This guy had a very bad sweet tooth that I believe he should now have curbed, you know, just getting older and further along his career. But he was a guy who shocked me with the amount of candy he could eat and still be able to perform at a high level. But then that goes right back into what we said about, they're exhausting, they're burning so many calories throughout the day. And there's so much that the general public doesn't see on display. Like, that's why it's always funny when a guy who you can see, like a guy who'll get in at the end of the game, it's like, oh, he's a bum, why are they putting it into? That guy is still taking about 500 to 800 jump shots a day. He's still going through dribbling drills, and he will still come to your local gym and literally look like the best player you've ever seen play in your life. But yeah, there's just guys who like can buck conventional wisdom, and they're just that God given in terms of talent and ability to where they can just buck like whatever the trends say, whatever science says. But one thing I've learned, that it always kind of catches back up to you. You know, it may not catch up to you, you know, at the front end of your career, but it'll catch up to you at the back end of your career. So if you're not getting, if you're used to functioning off of 4 to 5 hour sleeps in your 20s, it's going to start to catch up to you, you know, as you make your way to your 30s, throughout your 40s.
Is there a question that you have that you're afraid to ask? Have you been in that situation where there's something like, oh, I really want to ask this, or, but I probably shouldn't go down that path, or Man, I'd actually like to ask this question to a lot of people, and I would actually still like to be well regarded, so I probably shouldn't. You know,
I don't think there should be anything off the court or off the field. I will stay away from that just because it has no, really has no, it kind of will have a correlation into what they're doing. But if it doesn't pertain to a story, I try to stay out of guys' personal life because, you know, nobody wants to, you know, have a question answered about their family or their loved ones or things like that, especially if you're in a locker room with somebody or if it's a, it's a conversation for a topic that has nothing to do with that. So I always try and give guys the respect on staying out of personal matters unless they bring it up. And then like, okay, now can I ask you a follow-up to that? But I'll never try and lead with it. There may be questions about, say, if you're dealing with somebody who, you know, has significant weight gain or something like that. So when you're talking to like an NFL lineman or something like that, you may want to be careful in how you word certain questions, you know, the certain word, you never want to use the word fat or, you know, out of shape, you know, especially when talking to a professional athlete. So yeah, I would say there aren't too many questions where I won't ask, like as it pertains to the subject that I'm talking to, but I try to stay out of like personal matters because, you know, that could be a great way to like a conversation going the wrong way and you've just lost like, you know, whatever respect, you know, that subject had for you.
Mm. Talk to me a little bit about listening. I know you ask a lot of questions, you know, and as a writer, but I think this skill, you know, the listening skill is something that's overlooked a lot.
Absolutely.
The opportunity to put a question out there and actually, you know, listen, not step on the other person or kind of how you've kind of, I guess kind of your thought process on listening and seeing where things go. I would imagine you've been in that position where sometimes guys just start talking, you know, and as long as you let them talk.
Yes.
And learn to be a good listener, you're going to get a lot of stuff you didn't anticipate.
Absolutely. So there was a story. This is the most recent example. There was a story I did for Slam Magazine. And we're basically talking about, you know, Kevin Garnett's high school career. And I got a chance. I had to talk to his high school teammate, Ronnie Fields. And I had to talk to, you know, his high school coach, Wolf Nelson. And I was trying to track down Wolf for like, man, maybe 2 weeks. And, you know, my friend and also another writer, Eugene McIntosh, over at the Bigs, he actually connected me with Wolf. Man, from the moment that I talked to Wolf and I told him what I wanted to do, I may have asked him two questions. I was on the phone with him for 2 hours. He just had so many stories about Kevin Garnett and just that his time that he spent with him, you know, at the Nike summer camp. And then when Kevin Garnett came here to Chicago and that 1 year he had at Farragut, he had so many stories that I didn't want to stop him at all. I was like, keep going. Like, keep telling me. He was ordering food while in the middle of these stories. He's like at this, I forgot what the name of this place was, but he's ordering like smothered pork chops and he's still talking to me without skipping a beat. But I think that listening component is so important. I think I've seen writers go into interviews with questions already written out, and that kind of does a disservice to you because you're not even thinking about what that person is saying. You're just thinking like, all right, he answered that. Let me go to this question. If you listen to what he's saying and into that first answer, that may set up the rest of your interview. It's like, oh, really? I didn't know that. Well, can you talk a little bit more about that or how you did this or how did it feel when you went through that? I believe that listening component is so important when doing these, you know, 15, even the real life diet series. If you look at it, it seems so simple because you're just talking to guys about their routine, nutrition, diet. But some of the stuff that is also very difficult because, you know, you have a word count you have to adhere to and you have to lead that conversation to, I have to pull something out of you that's insightful, not only for our readers, but something for my editor. Say, oh, okay, let's lead with that. So I have to listen. So that's why we all have two ears. So a majority of, you know, those conversations are just me listening and trying to figure out, like, oh, what did you say? Okay, well, talk to me a little bit more about that. How did you get to this point in your career where you wanted to go? Like with Chris Paul, you know, I knew he went plant-based and when he went to Oklahoma City, but why did you go plant-based? And what were the challenges of going plant-based? Like, what foods, like, did it suck eliminating? And even when you talk to the younger guys, like, why are you going vegan or plant-based at 20, 21, especially when you've grown up most of your life eating pork, beef? Like, how does it feel to, like, get away from those? Are you tempted because most of your teammates are still eating, like, these meals that you've kind of sworn off of? So listening is so valuable in, you know, being able to get, like, a great interview, but also, like, showing who you're talking to that, okay, he actually is listening to me, and he's not just trying to, like, just go through the motions, get his questions out the way, and we're done.
Is it a combination of both to that effect? I mean, you gotta come prepared.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you know, do you walk out sometimes going, okay, I didn't get to my questions, and that's okay because I was listening and we had better follow-up or we got there. But so you kind of show up with a combination of both, like, maybe here's a starter and let's see where this goes. And sometimes I go back to my question, or sometimes it leads me to, you know, another question or two, or that I didn't have prepared, but I'm reacting, as you said, with the two ears and one mouth approach.
Yeah, absolutely. So my approach has been to, I never go into an interview, especially with the Real Life Diet Series, with a set of questions written out. I'll kind of have, like, bullet points in terms of topics that I want to touch on, and, you know, just seeing keywords that'll, like, trigger something like, all right, well, let me ask him about this, or let me ask him about this particular aspect of his training. And then we go from there, and then whatever information that I'm given, now I know where to lead things going forward, just to try and get as much information or much important information as possible. So I do go in, not with questions, but with just, like, key points with each individual guy. So those key points will be different depending on who the guy is. But yeah, I go in there with the intent on listening and just trying to get the most important aspects of their training or their diet, you know, on the paper once I'm done.
What's a question that you ask? What's a question you want to be asked?
Oh man, that's
you do a lot of dudes. You talk to a lot of people. Is there a question that you're like, nobody ever asks me that?
Man, that's a good question.
Well, I appreciate that. By the way, when you're talking to somebody who does as much incredible writing and asks as many questions as you, and you say good question, thank you. Okay, just want you to know, you just made my day. Appreciate it. this one we'll hang on to for a second.
Yeah, I've never been asked that question. Is this, like, a general question, or if, like, one of the guys, because I have had athletes that will ask a follow-up, will ask me a question like, well, how do you do this? Or, like, or when I talk about, can't really give away the name right now, but I talked to a quarterback, and we were talking about something about, you know, going vegan. And I asked him specifically, like, just about, like, the water, like, how did his water intake change or something like that. And when he gave me, like, the amount of water he started drinking, I was like, wow, that's a lot of damn water. Well, he's just like, well, how much water do you drink throughout the day? And that led to him asking me a couple of other questions. I was like, all right, look here, let's get back to the interview. I was like, you're the one, you know, you're the money essentially right now. So let's get back to, you know, your routine. But I really can't think of a question.
Yeah, I mean, always like to be asked. Yeah, and I don't necessarily know either. As it struck me there, it just seems like, again, every so often I'll get a question that's asked of me, and I go, "Oh, okay." I was actually surprised to get that. Or, you know, as I'm asking, nobody ever asked me about my family here, or they didn't ask me about how I train or anything, or things that you're like, I kind of want to get that out, and I wonder about that. You know, sometimes, especially when we spend so much time asking the questions, you know, I was wondering, like,
sometimes. Yeah, I've had some.
What does somebody want to ask me?
Yeah, I've had some that stick out. Like I said, being around like the Bulls for that long, I've gotten the chance to, you know, have these like little interactions with like a Kobe Bryant or a LeBron James, like some of the best athletes in the world. And I remember one, we're talking to, I was, believe Blake Griffin was with the Clippers at the time. And we were talking about his shoes, and he asked me, what did I think about a particular shoe? And I was honest with him. I was like, well, I think it sucks for that price point. But if you like took $30 off, and he was just like, yo, I agree 100% with you. And he started asking me other questions, and it was great just to have that back and forth. Just, you know, athletes don't have to do that because their times are so like regimented in terms of, you know, get to the practice facility, shoot around for 2 hours, get back to the hotel, rest, nap, eat, get back to the arena, game, flight out, you know, in 2 hours. So, yeah, that's a great question. I've never thought about what questions I would like asked, period.
I got a couple I appreciate. I got just a couple more because I really do appreciate your time. And there's so much insight into this, seeing it through the lens, you know, and the perspective that you bring again as a writer. I mean, you've talked about your mentors in writing and how those guys have gotten kind of older and they become legendary, you know, in a way, and the athletes are still and you've also talked about routine of athletes and the people that you talk about. What about retired athletes in terms of these guys that transition from the game and now they don't have the routine in a way, the same discipline, right? Because they're not scripted by the team and everything else. Do you have any kind of experience in that, or are these or guys that have either reached out to you or you've seen them differently? Because, man, I got to believe that's so hard. You're talking about real life diet. You're talking about routines. You're in the locker room. You're seeing this. And then it's gone in regard. Maybe not the end, the money, the lifestyle. You still have your youth. You still have everything. But now all of a sudden that routine, that discipline, that need for that pregame ritual, meal, all of that stuff, it's stripped away. Because you're not doing it anymore.
Yeah, and I think they have to be more cognizant once they retire. Once you're away from, you know, when you're a professional athlete and you're going through your career, you're in a gym at some point, you know, during the day. So, like, whether you have to lift weights because the team is requiring it, you know, it's a part of it. Just becomes a part of your life. But one thing I have seen with retired guys, there are some guys who suffer once their careers are done. It's like, oh, thank God. I don't have to do this no more. I don't have to wake up this early. So they let themselves kind of go. They stop getting we've all seen the retired athletes who, once we see them after their careers are done, they're a little bit more chunkier in the face. Their waistline has expanded a little bit. But, you know, I never like to judge and say, oh, that guy's just fat and lazy now. No, we don't think about it. A lot of times these guys have so many like debilitating injuries they built out throughout the course of their career. It hurts, you know, walking around, or, you know, they may need surgeries that they may be putting off just because they don't want to be taken off of their feet or off of their second careers. A lot of athletes go into broadcasting, you know, so they don't want to be away from still making that living. So they'll put off a surgery. But for football players, they're like, I would say they have to pay so much attention to how they eat after they're done retirement, because now you're not burning, you know, 3,000 calories a day because you're not going through the rigors of a two-a-day or OTAs. Like, now you're chilling now. So you can't eat the same way you're used to throughout the course of your career. Now you have to scale it back. And for like guys who have done things a certain way for 2+ decades, if not more, how do you now begin to transition to, well, man, I can't eat as big a breakfast or big as lunch anymore because I don't need to do that anymore. But the body still is kind of like adjusting to, well, I'm used to you eating this way, but now you can't because you're not burning it. So retired athletes have to be very mindful of like trying to find a new routine and a new way of eating, because you can imagine for like a Shaquille O'Neal or Charles Barkley, or you look at Shannon Sharpe, he's like the outlier of a guy who still he loves working out. So it's not going to be hard for him to go to the gym or, you know, eat how he used to eat while he was playing. But for guys who are used to eating like these huge meals, now how do you begin to now taper that down and find a new way to eat, or like find another workout routine where you're not lifting 500 pounds or bench pressing like these large number of weights, but you still have to find some way to be active now that works for your new lifestyle.
Totally. Man, I'll tell you, a couple of guys that jump out to me right now as you were talking about it. And the reason I was asking that is I'm fortunate enough to be around and train with a number of retired athletes. And it's just amazing to me when these guys do have the discipline, again, and the consistency that after everything they've been through, it really, for some, it's become a lifestyle. You know, yeah. I see guys like Owen Daniels, you know, who played for the Houston Texans down here and won with the Broncos. Andre Johnson just had his birthday the other day. You know, I see him, you know, in our gym all the time, and he is still an absolute beast. He'd be terrific, by the way.
Andre Johnson, yeah.
Troy Aikman at 55.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Andre Johnson's in unbelievable condition still.
You touched on a word.
Troy Aikman at 55 is doing amazing stuff.
Yeah, you touched on a word that I think is most important: lifestyle. Like that's the thing. Like the guys that you mentioned, that's ingrained in them now. Like, so if you take that away from them, who knows how they would react? They would probably find a different way to be able to still be active. But for a lot of these guys, their lifestyle is only just dependent on just because this is my job. And once that job is taken away, now it's just like, oh, okay, I don't have to work out anymore. I still like eating, so I'm going to do that. But now, like, how do you find a way to stay in shape now? Because you can't just fully let yourself go because now you're setting yourself up for health challenges, you know, down the line. But that one word you said is the most important one: lifestyle.
Totally. Well, Chris, this has been great to get to kind of hear and see things through, again, the way you approach what you do. Again, big fan of yours, big fan of certainly, you know, learning about other people and telling stories and doing it. And I really appreciate you being gracious enough to come on, hearing these stories, your personal story about how you've taken your career where you've gotten it. And I'm excited to see again where it continues to go. How do people find you, find your work? Just make sure we cover that too.
Yeah, definitely. Everything. So Twitter, Instagram is at C4Dunk. That's C, the number 4, D-U-N-K. You can find me on pretty much all social medias, excluding TikTok. I'm just too old to be getting on TikTok. So, but everything else, you can find me at C4Dunk.
Well, you're coming back at 40. If you're going to call yourself old at 37 right now, you're coming back again at 40. Okay, we'll keep doing this. We'll keep doing this at a couple of benchmarks, and we'll see how you feel then, okay?
Definitely. I appreciate it.
All right, Chris Kaysen, Midlife Male Podcast. He's not truly 40 yet, okay, but he is out there. He is working it. He might feel a little old, looks a little young, okay, out there talking to the best of the guys in the sports world and lifestyle world out there. So please check out his work, all right? Follow him on all the social platforms. I'm not a TikTok guy yet either, okay? Not really my thing, okay?
At
49, we'll see. I'm told that that's supposed to change. It's not just a young person's platform, but I don't know. I don't know there yet.
Yeah, it's way too young.
Guys, if
me.
You like what you have... Guys, if you like what you have heard on the podcast today, please give us that 5-star rating. Leave us a good review. Again, go out there and follow Chris. Read his work. Thank you so much for your support. I am out of here until next week. Take it easy. If you're interested in coaching and taking this conversation deeper so that you can achieve your personal and professional goals, be sure to head over to midlifemail.com and check out the Work With Me page to explore options.